several miles off the main highway, tucked away in a secluded canyon on prime vineyard property, stands a rustic barn that was built many decades before the vines around it were planted. In that barn, a sophisticated broadcast and recording studio has been built. The barn also has a well-hidden root cellar stocked with many of the world's most exceptional wines, only to be shared with guests who secretly come to offer their insights and tell their stories. Guests are sworn to secrecy and are shuttled to the studio aboard a John Deere tractor. Those who cannot make the journey in person are interviewed by satellite hookup, and sometimes the crew simply sneaks away with microphones in hand and interviews guests in barrel rooms, wine cellars, and other magical places. All of this is done like clockwork every single week, so that we can bring you another episode of Grape Encounters Radio.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wine me and dine me.
Oh my gosh, it is a picture perfect day in our super secret hideaway, and it is time for your weekly grape encounter with David Wilson on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. And a little later on, we're going to be getting into some Washington wines that are sitting right in front of me. That's going to be a whole lot of fun as we bring on the show Clive Pursehouse from the Oregon Wine Blog, and we're going to talk more about the products that are made up in Washington and Oregon and the very young generation that is drinking those products up there. And in just a second, Paul Callum Carrion Jr. from the Wine of the Month Club. But first, I want to share with you a really fun experience I had the evening after last week's show. I was invited to speak at a wine tasting put on by a Kiwanis Club out in the desert. Well, actually, the event was held up in Oak Glen, this absolutely wonderful historic little town that is nestled at the foot of the San Bernardino Mountains, famous for growing apples. And you can find the best apple pie, best apple cider, best apple strudel, best apple anything there. It's a real cute little town, fun place to go to. And this was a great event to go to. The wines were supplied by BevMo. They had a wine expert there, Rich, that poured some really interesting wines. But I had a particularly good time with this crowd, especially when I started to talk to them about the Grape Encounters attitude. And I was just telling them how we believe that, you know, it doesn't matter what you pay for a bottle of wine. It doesn't matter whether it's pink or red or white or comes from California or Timbuktu. If you like it, drink it. We will never judge you. You know, it's your wine and you should have fun with it. That Grape Encounters is all about the wine experience. And so I shared with them so many things that we believe here on the show, so many ways to enjoy the wine. And we had so much fun. So thank you guys very much for giving me that opportunity. It was so much fun. But we've got an awful lot to talk about, so let's get into it. You know, if there's one thing that I've noticed lately, it's that a lot of people are asking me about wine bargains and where to go for the best buys on wine. You know, as the economy gets tighter and tighter, people are being forced to buy less expensive wines and lower their budgets. And I get asked that question all the time. And from time to time, we'll talk about certain types of wine that are good values. For instance, we talk about Chilean wines being a tremendous value. We talk about the good buys that you can make on Merlots. But you know, if there's one person that I've met that probably knows more about good value, it's somebody that we had on a little over a month ago. He is the president of the original Wine of the Month Club, Paul Callum Carrion Jr. And talk about a guy with the best job on planet Earth. I got a chance to go visit Paul over at his Monrovia warehouse and tasting room. And oh my gosh, we're going to get into this, but he is one very lucky dog. And he's on the line with us. Hey, Paul, thanks for joining us on Grape Encounters.
It's great to be back. Thank you very much, David.
We enjoyed that last interview so much with you, and I had so many people comment on that. It was just so incredibly interesting because there are so many wine clubs out there right now. Of course, every winery practically has a wine club, and you know, then there are a lot of rogue wine clubs, but you guys were number one, numero uno. Your dad started it in, what was it, 1972?
1972, and And I'm glad you said that, because I have file drawers of wine clubs that have come and gone, and our longevity is, I think, clear to our quality and value relationship of the wines that we feature and the customer service we provide, and that our premise is not to sell more bottles of wine, it's to have fun and educate wine buyers.
So, you know, the reason I wanted to get you back on the show, in fact, when we did the show, I thought, oh my gosh, we should have just done the whole show with you. But the reason I wanted you back was because when I got a chance to walk around the warehouse and see your whole operation, one of the things that really stuck out in my mind was the fact that you guys go to great lengths to find really good wines at really good prices. And what I'm particularly impressed with is the fact that you're selling wines to your club members at really, really low prices. And you were showing me the prices that you're able to sell things for. And I was really amazed by that. It really stuck out in my mind that there are so many terrific values out there right now. It's probably never been a better time to buy wine.
I would agree with that. And it ebbs and flows. And having been doing this for so many years, we've seen cycles change, and clearly the cycle now is value-oriented wines. And most of my wholesalers will agree with this. I have one that told me the other day his sales to restaurants are off 50% because, well, the guy that used to have two bottles at dinner is only getting one, and the one bottle buyer now is only having a glass, which means we're drinking more wine at home.
But let me ask you a question about that, because I was livid the other day at a restaurant because I looked at this menu that, first of all, had a very poor offering of wine. It wasn't that they didn't have quantity, but they didn't certainly have quality. And then the markup on the bottles was clearly, you know, threefold and more. That's insulting. And if you're going to try to make money selling wine that way, it's only going to come back to bite you in the butt, I think.
Well, the average restaurateur will try and get his bottle cost or her bottle cost back in the first glass, so that the other four to five glasses are profit. And you know, the typical margin should be in. Usually, a restaurant will charge two times the retail price, the shelf price, plus some dollar, two or five. But that's changed as well. I mean, it's come down. You see a lot of places, like in Pasadena, California, here. There are Bring Your Own Wine Wednesdays, BYOWs, and there's probably 20 restaurants that you can bring your own wine on a Wednesday, and there's no corkage.
But let me ask you a question. With so much wine to choose from out there, why do we have to see the same tired, worn-out names on all of these wine lists? It's like, we're not talking Coke and Pepsi here. There's a lot to choose from.
Yeah. The real reason is most restaurateurs, the two reasons, most restaurateurs don't have time to create a wine list that they spend a lot of time on, and so what happens is, as the large vendors of wines in these areas, and of course there's Southern Wines and Spirits and other large houses across the country, they come in and they say, look, we'll print your new wine list for you. I'll just print
it,
and for no charge, and we expect X percent of the bottles of wine that are on that list.
Yeah.
They don't preclude you from using other wines, but they want most of the wine. So that's why you see Mondavi and Behringer and the other.
Yeah, and nothing against those wines, by the way, but I love it when you walk into a restaurant and you see creativity. So listen, I want to get into bargains. We got so much more to talk about. We're talking to Paul Kalamkarian Jr., president of the original, the Grand Poobah of them all, Wine of the Month Club, started in 1972. We got a whole lot more to talk about on Grape Encounters Radio here on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
A tropical island vacation doesn't have to mean long lines at security, crowded flights, and a huge travel budget. You'll find breathtaking ocean views, tropical breezes, exceptional dining and shopping, plus hundreds of ways to have fun on land and sea, just 26 miles off the Southern California coast, on enchanting Catalina Island. And there's absolutely no better way to enjoy everything that Catalina has to offer than in your own private Catalina Island vacation rental. Catalina Island Vacation Rentals offers you the choice of nearly 200 island homes, cottages, and condos, including an amazing selection of beautifully appointed Hamilton Cove villas, which offer sweeping ocean views and even come with a golf cart. Savor a special glass of wine on your private balcony and let the magic of Catalina sweep you away. All Catalina Island Vacation Rental properties can be viewed online at catalinavacations.com. Make yourself at home with Catalina Island Vacation Rentals. You'll find your perfect island getaway at catalinavacations.com.
You know, when we started this little unpretentious wine radio show more than a year and a half ago, I never dreamed that we would develop such a large listener base, but it's happened. We have so many people listening on regular radio and also listening to us on the internet. It really totally astounds me. And what astounds me more is how many of you write to us every single week, both on Facebook and on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. But you know, a lot of the letters that I get from you all are requests to talk about subjects that actually we've already talked about. So I want to encourage you to definitely check out the shows button on Grape Encounters Radio, because we've got every show that we've ever recorded archived there, and you can find a lot of great interviews with some really amazing people and a lot of discussions of some really, really interesting and fun topics. So be sure to check out shows at GrapeEncountersRadio.com. There's lots for you to listen to there.
You know wine, and you know quality. More Wine is the right choice for home winemaking supplies because they know quality too. Go to morewinemaking.com for the largest selection of equipment, supplies, and free information on making wine at home. Morewinemaking.com has winemakers on staff to assist you every step of the way, and they're committed to helping you make world-class wine at home. More Wine is the only company with professional quality wine yeast, additives, and nutrients so you can make wine like the pros. Visit their helpful and huge website today at morewinemaking.com. And if the best in service, equipment, ingredients, supplies, and free information isn't enough, More Wine gives you free shipping on most orders over $59. Step up to the highest quality in the best customer service in the business at morewinemaking.com. Put the best in your barrel from morewinemaking.com.
You know, if you're a frequent listener to Grape Encounters Radio, then you know that one of my absolute favorite contributors to the show is Keith Sarlos of Sarlos & Sons. He is a wealth of information and insight into the winemaking business and just plain wine enjoyment. But you know, the Sarlos family also makes some really incredible wines, and I learned today that out of 13 wines that they made this year, there are only 4 left. And guess what? The 4 left are 4 of my favorites. They've got Solo, which is their 100% Syrah. They've got Brothers, which is a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, and Merlot. They've got 1946 Moon, which is 60% Syrah and 40% Cab. And then they've got the wonderful Daughter Chardonnay, and this is the last year they're going to make that wine. If you're interested in buying these wines that are going to be gone soon, go to sarlosandsons.com. That's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S and sons.com. Well, this is certainly the place to be for your weekly Grape Encounter, including our weekly segment on home winemaking coming up soon with Tristan Johnson of morewinemaking.com. But right now, I'm super glad and really honored to have on the line Paul Kalamkarian Jr. We had him on about a month or so ago. He's the president of the Wine of the Month Club. And remember, folks, this is the original Wine of the Month Club. It started in 72. There have been a lot of wine clubs that have been created after that. I mean, thousands upon thousands. But this was the granddaddy of them all, and they're still going strong. And we are asking Paul to share some of his secrets in this segment and get him to tell us where the goodbyes are. Are you up for that, Paul?
I am. I'm a little nervous about
it. I know, but they won't need you, right, if you spill your guts here.
It's all right. We're still tasting 300 to 400 wines a month.
No, you know, the thing is that you take the legwork out for people, because I can see that you're fastidious about what you send out, and you really do focus on quality and economy, and that's a good thing in this world.
Quality is number one.
So, but hey, let me ask you this one question. So I'm over at your place, and there's this counter where you do your wine tasting, and there are just like rows upon rows of bottles of wine. People send you this stuff every day, right?
I get boxes. Just got one this morning.
Oh, you are a lucky man. And do you taste all of it?
We taste it all, and you'd be shocked at the sources. In fact, yesterday it was so funny. It hasn't happened in a while, but I had two major wholesalers in yesterday that they see two wines that were waiting for me to be tasted that I got through the winemaker direct. But it's in their book, and they say, "Hey, where'd you get that wine from?" I said, "Well, I got it from the winery." They said, "Well, that's my wine." I said, "Well, you know, that's not my problem." But I go, "What do you want to sell it to me for?" And she gives me a price, and the price I got quoted from the winery direct was half of what the wholesaler wanted to address the wine.
Ooh, somebody's really stepping on it. Let me ask you this question: when you see a bottle of wine, and it does happen where you'll find a good bottle of wine that's maybe only $3 or $4 or $5, they do exist. How do they manage to make any kind of a profit on that? I mean, just the cost of the bottle and bottling eats up a good percentage of that, doesn't it?
Well, it does. It so much depends on the volume that winery is producing. So much depends on where they're sourcing their grapes from. You can't make good wine from bad grapes, so that's how you have to start it. But we just finished a bottling of a Pinot Grigio from Washington State that is absolutely gorgeous, and I'm going to sell it for $7.99. It's 2008. It's just everybody I've tasted on it so far has flipped over it, and they're making a small profit. It's kind of like the same strategy. I mean, look, they're making profit on Charles Shaw at Trader Joe's for what is it, $1.99? Somebody's making money. They're not losing money. So
it's totally amazing.
It's economies of scale and. And sometimes they don't. I'll be honest. Sometimes I get wines where they're just not making any money, but they need to move the wine out of the warehouse because the next vintage is coming and they have no place to put it.
You can't just throw it away. Well, I guess you can.
They won't. Well, once they pick it and ferment it, they're going to try and sell it.
But I think one of the big things is the millennial generation is really sucking down a lot of wine, and they're really operating on a very limited budget. But they also tend to be pretty particular because they think nothing of spending, $4 or $5 on a coffee at Starbucks, right?
That's right. That's a good point.
So anyway, they're definitely hunting for bargains. I think they look on the internet. But generally speaking, let's talk about where the bargains are coming from, both out of the state, out of the country, and right here in California.
Regionally, the South American wines are doing very well in the bargain fight. And not only because, the dollar's a little stronger, but the investment that French, Australian, and American wineries have put in those areas in South America, Chile being the first one, has now starting to pay off in quality, but they're able to get it landed here where you can find a really nice South American wine for $5.99 to $7.99 that rivals $15 bottle of wine that we produce and put on the shelf here. Another region which has popped, it's not just popped up, but what's happened in the world of wine, not only in California, but parts of Argentina and parts of Chile, even Uruguay, parts of Italy that were known for its bulk wine production, like Umbria, where the thing is just pouring out, and the south of France and the Languedoc, which also was known for its bulk production, have now put time and energy into producing quality, and the values are very high.
Yeah, but here's the question is, how do you, as a consumer, navigate those waters? Because, if you're standing in front of a row of wines and you're not familiar with them, sometimes the only thing you have to go by is the score on the shelf or some notes from that wine shop. I think people get lost.
You absolutely do, and there's no easy answer to that. It's having somebody behind that, that shelf table talker, the shelf talker we call them, that actually believes in what they wrote.
It really does come down to that too. That you have to have a relationship with somebody that shares your taste,
right.
And that somebody has to be someone that you believe in.
Right, and that's kind of how we came about. We taste it all, and I can't please all the palates all the time. I know that, but I will guarantee you the wines that we ship you for that price are really good examples of what they are. If they don't suit your palate, we'll replace it with something that does. But if you went to the wine shelf at your favorite store, and Robert Parker, for instance, I trust his judgment, was saying for $7.99, this is a great value because this part of Italy produces these wines, I think you're pretty safe with that. But I have the same problem as a guy that tastes wine virtually every day and as for a living, that if I walk into the market and I haven't tasted that brand or that vintage of that grape, I have no idea what it's going to taste like.
Now, you have a particular palate, and I'm guessing that if people buy your wines, enjoy your wines, that they're going to find a great deal of continuity from one shipment to the next.
They'll find that it's an express. My palate is my palate.
Right.
That's my personal thing. But what I've been able to refine over the years, or anybody that does what I do, is what people are interested in buying and seeing, and what flavor profiles do well because they serve the general public. There are oftentimes I find a wine that's really interesting to me, but has no shelf appeal because it's just kind of too complicated in some cases. So I'm very aware of what I think the customers are looking for. Certainly, varietally, I'm aware of what people want. Like Malbec is very hot. I mean, if you look at my Facebook page, if I bring up the word Argentina or Malbec, I guess the most responses I ever get, I love Malbec. It's a great grape. Things are really happening. And so,
Let's talk about that for a second, because there are a lot of varietals that are showing up now that people are unfamiliar with. There's some great wines out there that are really new discoveries, but because of the lack of knowledge about those, people may or may not try them. What are the hot ticket items?
Well, I'll start with Malbec, as we already brought up. That is coming to us in droves from all kinds of brands and from all price ranges. I've featured very good ones at $6.99 and $7.99, and I tasted one the other day. It was $49.99 a bottle. It was pretty good wine. I even have one in stock that's almost $100. But Malbec would be the number one varietal that just seems to be getting popular and interesting, and still has what they call fighting varietal pricing.
So what kind of people will migrate over to Malbec? What are they drinking?
Well, it is one of the Bordeaux varieties, so it's part of the Cabernet, Merlot, Petit Verdot, Cabernet Franc family in the sense of its profiles, and it's used for structure in Bordeaux and color, and I think that's the kind of person that will drink those. I don't think a Pinot Noir drinker necessarily would migrate over, and I don't think a Syrah drinker would, but somebody that's into the Merlot Cabernet world would do that.
Okay, well,
you know, its counterpart in Argentina, in Chile, Torontes, is gaining some foothold, and they're very reasonable. The very different flavor profile than what we're used to with Chardonnay, for instance, and Sauvignon Blanc. It's a great wine, very tropical, kind of banana, coconut flavors in it.
Okay, so
very reasonable.
Let's talk about the States for a minute. We will have on the show later on somebody that we love from the Oregon Wine Blog, and talking about Pacific Northwest wines, and really have found some great bargains up there. Certainly a great place to buy wines. Are you getting wines in from other states in the Union? I mean, all 50 states make wines.
Yes. Oh, we got them. Get them from all over. Even have featured wines from Virginia, which is, you know, Thomas Jefferson's planted Chardonnay out there. Washington has been very popular lately, and Oregon always has been, but they keep their wines to themselves. They're kind of like the French. You know, the real fun boutique Oregon wines don't make it down here all that frequently. They're available, and they're reasonable, and they've done a great job with Pinot Noir. Pinot Gris is really fun from that area.
Yeah.
I always look forward to
no doubt
on my door.
Okay, so let's come to California. You know, California wines tend to be a little bit pricier, but where will we find the bargains?
Right now, Lodi.
Lodi, yeah.
And again, here's a region that was known for table grapes and kind of a weird weather profile to produce other wines, but I'm starting to see some very high quality wines. I just featured a Cabernet called Ukiah, oddly enough. It was like drinking almost a chocolate port. You wanted to pour that Cabernet and just get a piece of bittersweet chocolate. There's only been a few wines in my career that I've felt that way. It was just so fun to taste. And Lodi can produce, you know, overly extracted, too hot, lots of alcohol wines, but they've learned to be more finessed and more feminine, and they're producing some really fun things.
But nice bargains also, and great wines coming out of places like Mendocino County. And, of course, the Central Coast has great bargains and great wines.
Absolutely.
And prices have just come down, haven't they?
In general, coming down. Here's what's happening. Right now, we just finished harvest. Dust being crushed, and it's being fermented. When it comes out of the fermentation tanks, they've got to put a place to store it. Well, those storage tanks have last year's vintage in it. Those have to be bottled, put on the warehouse floor for shipment. Well, what's on the warehouse floor right now is 2 years ago's wines, and those need to be moved out. And if I can't get them out at the price that I really want, I've got to get them out at some price.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
Ain't that the truth? Hey, Paul, you know what? It's the end of our time here for the moment, but we'll get back on the air very soon. You and I talked off the air about the fact that we're going to post a Wine of the Month special for Grape Encounters listeners only, and we'll announce that pretty soon. But in the meantime, if you want to know more about the Wine of the Month Club and what Paul's doing, it's wineofthemonth.com, right? Or is it wineofthemonthclub.com?
Wineofthemonthclub.com, and I'm very excited about creating this special deal for your listeners. We're going to have a lot of fun with that.
I really appreciate that. I really enjoy what you're doing, enjoy your wines and your knowledge. Paul Kalamkarian, Jr., president of Wine of the Month Club here on Grape Encounters Radio. We certainly appreciate having you here.
My My pleasure.
And you are listening to us on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
You know wine, and you know quality. More Wine is the right choice for home winemaking supplies because they know quality too. Go to morewinemaking.com for the largest selection of equipment, supplies, and free information on making wine at home. Morewinemaking.com has winemakers on staff to assist you every step of the way, and they're committed to helping you make world-class wine at home. More Wine is the only company with professional quality wine yeast, additives, and nutrients so you can make wine like the pros. Visit their helpful and huge website today at morewinemaking.com. And if the best in service, equipment, ingredients, supplies, and free information isn't enough, More Wine gives you free shipping on most orders over $59. Step up to the highest quality and the best customer service in the business at morewinemaking.com. Put the best in your barrel from morewinemaking.com.
You know, when we started this little unpretentious wine radio show more than a year and a half ago, I never dreamed that we would develop such a large listener base, but it's happened. We have so many people listening on regular radio and also listening to us on the internet. It really totally astounds me. And what astounds me more is how many of you write to us every single week, both on Facebook and on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. But you know, a lot of the letters that I get from you all are requests to talk about subjects that actually we've already talked about. So I want to encourage you to definitely check out the shows button on Grape Encounters Radio, because we've got every show that we've ever recorded archived there, and you can find a lot of great interviews with some really amazing people and a lot of discussions of some really, really interesting and fun topics. So be sure to check out shows at GrapeEncountersRadio.com. There's lots for you to listen to there.
A tropical island vacation doesn't have to mean long lines at security, crowded flights, and a huge travel budget. You'll find breathtaking ocean views, tropical breezes, exceptional dining and shopping, plus hundreds of ways to have fun on land and sea, just 26 miles off the Southern California coast, on enchanting Catalina Island. And there's absolutely no better way to enjoy everything that Catalina has to offer than in your own private Catalina Island vacation rental. Catalina Island Vacation Rentals offers you the choice of nearly 200 island homes, cottages, and condos, including an amazing selection of beautifully appointed Hamilton Cove villas, which offer sweeping ocean views and even come with a golf cart. Savor a special glass of wine on your private balcony and let the magic of Catalina sweep you away. All Catalina Island Vacation Rental properties can be viewed online at catalinavacations.com. Make yourself at home with Catalina Island Vacation Rentals. You'll find your perfect island getaway at catalinavacations.com.
You know, if you're a frequent listener to Grape Encounters Radio, then you know that one of my absolute favorite contributors to the show is Keith Sarlos of Sarlos & Sons. He is a wealth of information and insight into the winemaking business and just plain wine enjoyment. But you know, the Sarlos family also makes some really incredible wines, and I learned today that out of 13 wines that they made this year, there are only 4 left. And guess what? The 4 left are 4 of my favorites. They've got Solo, which is their 100% Syrah. They've got Brothers, which is a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, and Merlot. They've got 1946 Moon, which is 60% Syrah and 40% Cab. And then they've got the wonderful Daughter Chardonnay, and this is the last year they're going to make that wine. If you're interested in buying these wines that are going to be gone soon, go to sarlosandsons.com. That's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S and sons.com. It's Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson here on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. And I have on the line somebody I have really been wanting to get back on Grape Encounters because we have a little score to settle. It's Clive Pursehouse of the Oregon Wine Blog. And Clive, you've been avoiding us for at least 2 months now. What's going on?
I have been hiding. I've been a little, I'm a little nervous about my...
Your little challenge that you made, and we have not forgotten that, by the way, and I think we've even mentioned it on a couple of earlier shows, and we are going to definitely put you to the test. I want to bring my listeners up to date about who you are and how we became associated. Clive took a swipe at me, folks, not too terribly long ago, because I made a little comment about screw top caps. I just said that they weren't very romantic, and Clive said that I was full of baloney, and that the wines that they have up there in Washington and Oregon that are enclosed by screw caps are so good that you don't need a cork for those wines to be romantic. Is that about right?
That's pretty accurate.
Okay, so then you sent some wines down here, and we tried them, and they were pretty doggone good.
They were good. Good wine.
But we still had the crunch of the screw cap. But here's the funny thing, though, or the fun part of it. Clive decides that that little test was not enough, and he wants to take it one step further. And so he starts bragging that he can identify wines from the Pacific Northwest in a blind tasting. And we asked him if he could identify 10 wines from the Pacific Northwest, and he said yes. So what we were going to do is actually lay 20 wines out in front of Clive, have him try them all, and if he could identify all 10 of his children, then he would get a case of the very best California Pinot. And are you still up for the challenge, or are you getting scared now?
I've been training, actually. I have to say, I was drinking a California Pinot the other night, and it was so good, it scared me.
Well, what was it?
It was a Mary Edwards.
Okay.
Is that right?
It was a Mary Edwards.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was a Russian River Valley Pinot, and it was quite good. I thought elegant, similar to some of the wines you would taste coming out of Oregon. So
you don't have you don't have a wild hair about California wines, right? You just think that Oregon and Washington wines deserve a little more credit than they're getting.
A little more space at the table, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. So, tell us about the Oregon Wine Blog for a second, because you guys are really very, very hip, and you're promoting to a very young crowd.
Yeah, I was listening to one of your shows from over the summer, and you were talking a little bit about the millennial generation, and it's kind of the change in, you know, that's the demographic now that wine and winemakers and the wine industry is interested in attracting. And so that's really, and that's not why we're doing it, but that's where we are in age at this point in time. And we really feel like, hey, you know, young people, there's a lot of great wine out there, and some of it is, you know, very affordable. Some of it's not. We want you to give it all a try, kind of take advantage of being in the Northwest for those of our readers who are in the Northwest, and get out and start making some relationships with some great.
So, are you guys trying to steer the younger generation away from some of the cheap mass-produced stuff that they can get at the market and, you know, other stores?
Sure, absolutely. I think, you know, everybody's got to start somewhere. And I was thinking of your show about the gentleman who was turning 21 in the restaurant and some of the wines that he was starting out with. And you know, sure, everyone's got to start somewhere, but. You know, I think of the concept of kind of evolving your palate as a young person, as a young wine drinker. And, you know, we've got these young folks my age and younger who are willing to drop $5 or $6 on a coffee, but they're not willing to pay more than $15 for an entire bottle of wine.
That's a very good point. And, you know, we talk all the time and have been talking on this show about the fact that there are some amazing wine buys out there, and you don't have to drink junk. You don't.
No, there's no excuse for it.
Now you sent some wines up here to make that point from Forgerone's Cellars.
Correct, yeah. Forgerone's Cellars from Walla Walla here in Washington. And the winemaker is Marie Eve, and she's from France. She's been over here for going on maybe 20 years now. And this is just the kind of wine that, you know, it's not an expensive wine, and you can have a great experience with it. And that's what wine is really about, and that's what we're about on the Oregon Wine Blog, is talking about the kinds of experiences that you can have with wine, you can have when you visit wine country, meet winemakers, other interesting people who are into wine as well. So, and that's really what it's about. So, yeah, I had some wine sent your way.
Yeah, okay, so I want you to know that last night I went ahead and tasted the Zinfandel. Actually, we tasted the whole bottle.
So not bad, then, you must have thought.
That, you know, it wasn't bad. You know, I don't think it was a California-style wine, but I'll tell you what, there was some testosterone in that Zinfandel. Tell me a little bit about that one, because it was terrific.
Yeah, this wine is really, and I'm being quite honest when I say this. So I met Marie back in the spring, and I tasted this wine for the first time, and I have been smitten with this wine. And I think you're right. It's a pretty big wine coming out of Washington, and it's not raisiny. It's
right.
More of a spicy style of Zinfandel.
Oh yeah.
And I think for people who are looking to transition and maybe those bigger, you know, not bigger, but more austere style of wines that maybe they're afraid of, this is certainly not that. This is a fun wine, a lot of spice on the nose, and a lot of interesting things happening in the palate. And I think this kind of wine, it's a blend of multiple vineyards in the state of Washington. And what she's trying to do with her wine is really let the fruit speak for itself, let the kinds of wines that Washington is capable of making speak for itself. She's got an old world kind of approach to her, but this is certainly a bigger wine than you would find in the old world.
Got it. If you are just joining us, it's one of our favorite guests. It's Clive Pursehouse from the Oregon Wine Blog, except we're talking about Washington wines. I never get that with you, you know. And you promote both states, do you not?
That's right. This is we're the Oregon Wine Blog, and sometimes I think that causes confusion for people because I'm in Washington. We talk about wines made in Washington. But we're really about Northwest, promoting Northwest wines, getting people who live in the Northwest especially to drink Northwest wines, not necessarily more over California wines or over French wines, but really thinking about, hey, what's going on here at home?
Okay, so you were telling me off the air about an event that's coming up. It's called 20-something. And this is super interesting. What's that all about?
So 20-something, you know, we talked earlier about kind of your experience in the restaurant with the guy who was turning 21 and the kinds of wines he was drinking. And thinking about young people and what are they drinking? What are they thinking about drinking? Are they going in and laying down?
Let me just interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
For those who don't know the story, I was sitting in a wine bar and there were these young kids in there. They didn't even look old enough to drink wine. And it was this kid's birthday. He was just turning 21 and he chose a bottle of wine that was, you know, just pure junk. I mean, cheap wine. And I had a great bottle. So I went over and I poured him a glass of that because this was going to be his first legal sip of wine, and I wanted it to be a good one. And anyway, that's what that story was about.
Yeah, and I think it's that kind of idea of, hey, you know, you're getting into wine, you have to start somewhere, and that's totally acceptable. But evolving your palate and thinking about what's next, what can I try next? And so 20-something, it's called, you know, the event is 20-something, the new vintage, and it's really for younger people. I'm in my 30s. They're going to let me in. I found out. I was a little nervous. But it's really to get young people to think about good wine, and specifically the wine here in Washington.
Okay, so let's go back to Forgeron for a second. I have an 07 Chardonnay, Columbia Valley, I believe, right?
That's right.
Then I have a 2009 Marsan from Yakima, right?
Yeah, and so Washington, I think when people think about Washington, they don't even necessarily think about what happens beyond the state. And, you know, a lot of the wines that many people are making in the state may highlight a particular AVA like Red Mountain, or it may take wines from or take fruit from various parts of the state. And the Columbia Valley wines are typically that. The Columbia Valley is really kind of the parent AVA of the entire state. And so if you're blending wines from different vineyards, you're going to get a Columbia Valley on the label.
Okay, so I'm trying this. I'm trying the 07 Chardonnay. Mm. Actually, I cheated. I sipped while you were talking, so I can't fool anybody. But this is spectacular.
It's great.
I mean, this is really this is a fabulous Chardonnay that doesn't reek with too much oak. It's beautiful.
It is a beautiful wine, and thank you for saying so.
And I'm serious. It's beautiful. It deserves to be called beautiful. What's it cost?
The cost on this wine, I want to say, is $19 or $18.
Okay, so that's maybe a little bit above a 20-something budget.
Sure.
You know,
but, you know, again, like we were talking earlier, people are going around with $6 cups of coffee and getting people to think about wine as a, not something that's going to get you drunk, but it's, you know, it might, and that's great. And I have no, you know, qualms about that as well. But it's really about enjoying the experience, enjoying the sensual kind of elements of the beverage.
I noticed, by the way, your comment about it being sensual reminded me of the fact that these bottles do not have screw caps. They have corks.
That's true. That is true.
They are so much more sensual this way. Okay, but you know, it's an interesting point that you make about the $6 coffee, because if you open up a bottle of wine and you share it with three or four people, it's actually cheaper, isn't it? At $19 or $20.
You have a better experience with it. And I love coffee, don't get me wrong. I drink a lot of it.
But. Yeah. Okay, so we're moving on this Marsan. And I also cheated on this one, but I just want to just refresh my memory.
Go for it.
I actually am almost gulping here. Okay, so this is a fantastic wine. This is just absolutely beautiful. It has a lot going on. It's a very flowery wine. And, you know, crisp and delicious. It's kind of actually reminds me of like a Washington apple. You know, it's got some, that sort
of
crispness to it.
Right, the nice fruit elements on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's true. And how much is this? This is less.
This is not a cheap wine. This is
It's more.
Yeah, it's more than the Chardonnay. It's $28. There's only 64 cases of this wine that were made.
Oh, okay. So all right. Okay.
It's a small lot production, and I think... But it, like you said, I mean, you kind of just said it all. It's a phenomenal wine.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. All right, folks, it's the OregonWineBlog.com. You can see what's going on in the Pacific Northwest, Washington, and Oregon. And Clive, we're going to set a date, and we are going to go through with the challenge. Are we not?
I'm looking forward to it. I've been like,
seriously, you're going to do it, right?
I'm going to do it. I've been punching meat, you know, Rocky, with the whole, I've been training.
All right. Hey, Clive, I appreciate your being on the show. I really do. And we will drag your butt back on the show very soon. We'll set a date. We're going to get this done. And I think we're going to come up to Washington and do it there.
Well, and I would love to come down because I want to get one of those secretive John Deere tractor rides.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? We can actually do that. We can actually do that. And there is so much to talk about today, so much, including our mini-series on home winemaking on Grape Encounters Radio. And you are listening to us on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. You know, when we started this little unpretentious wine radio show more than a year and a half ago, I never dreamed that we would develop such a large listener base, but it's happened. We have so many people listening on regular radio and also listening to us on the internet. It really totally astounds me. And what astounds me more is how many of you write to us every single week, both on Facebook and on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. But you know, a lot of the letters that I get from you all are requests to talk about subjects that actually we've already talked about. So I want to encourage you to definitely check out the shows button on Grape Encounters Radio, because we've got every show that we've ever recorded archived there, and you can find a lot of great interviews with some really amazing people and a lot of discussions of some really, really interesting and fun topics. So be sure to check out shows at GrapeEncountersRadio.com. There's lots for you to listen to there.
A tropical island vacation doesn't have to mean long lines at security, crowded flights, and a huge travel budget. You'll find breathtaking ocean views, tropical breezes, exceptional dining and shopping, plus hundreds of ways to have fun on land and sea, just 26 miles off the Southern California coast, on enchanting Catalina Island. And there's absolutely no better way to enjoy everything that Catalina has to offer than in your own private Catalina Island vacation rental. Catalina Island Vacation Rentals offers you the choice of nearly 200 island homes, cottages, and condos, including an amazing selection of beautifully appointed Hamilton Cove villas, which offer sweeping ocean views and even come with a golf cart. Savor a special glass of wine on your private balcony and let the magic of Catalina sweep you away. All Catalina Island Vacation Rental properties can be viewed online at catalinavacations.com. Make yourself at home with Catalina Island Vacation Rentals. You'll find your perfect island getaway at catalinavacations.com.
You know wine, and you know quality. More Wine is the right choice for home winemaking supplies because they know quality too. Go to morewinemaking.com for the largest selection of equipment, supplies, and free information on making wine at home. Morewinemaking.com has winemakers on staff to assist you every step of the way, and they're committed to helping you make world-class wine at home. More Wine is the only company with professional quality wine yeast, additives, and nutrients so you can make wine like the pros. Visit their helpful and huge website today at morewinemaking.com. And if the best in service, equipment, ingredients, supplies, and free information isn't enough, More Wine gives you free shipping on most orders over $59. Step up to the highest quality and the best customer service in the business at morewinemaking.com. Put the best in your barrel from morewinemaking.com.
You know, if you're a frequent listener to Grape Encounters Radio, then you know that one of my absolute favorite contributors to the show is Keith Sarlos of Sarlos & Sons. He is a wealth of information and insight into the winemaking business and just plain wine enjoyment. But you know, the Sarlos family also makes some really incredible wines, and I learned today that out of 13 wines that they made this year, there are only 4 left. And guess what? The 4 left are 4 of my favorites. They've got Solo, which is their 100% Syrah. They've got Brothers, which is a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, and Merlot. They've got 1946 Moon, which is 60% Syrah and 40% Cab. And then they've got the wonderful Daughters Chardonnay, and this is the last year they're going to make that wine. If you're interested in buying these wines that are going to be gone soon, go to sarlosandsons.com. That's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S and sons.com.
I love my rosy child. You got the way to make me happy. You and me, we go.
David Wilson here, having more fun than is legally allowed on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. And we're back with more Grape Encounters Radio. And in this segment, we're going to talk about one of the most insidious addictions that you will ever hear about. And what I'm talking about is home winemaking. I've got on the line one of our favorite guests and part of our ongoing series about home winemaking, Tristan Johnson from morewinemaking.com. And Tristan, we're going to talk about going pro today, right?
That's right.
And so, you know, we've talked about how you can become a home winemaker. We've gone through the whole process. You know, it's interesting. I've had so many guests on this show who are really renowned winemakers who really started out, I mean, literally making wine in their bathroom or their garage or whatever, and caught the bug, became addicted to it, and then next thing you know, they're giving up, you know, high-paying professions to find their fortune in the winemaking world.
That's right. That's right. And it's, you know, it's something that I think that every home winemaker and really most people who really appreciate wine kind of always have in the back of their head, is this idea of, I'm going to start a winery someday, or I'd love to do this. And I think it's really important for people to be aware of what they're really talking about doing.
But why do you think people actually, you know, get so involved in it to the point that they can't be satisfied with just making a couple hundred gallons? You know, what are they out to achieve? They want commercial success, or they just hate their current job? What is it?
I think there's definitely a sense of romanticism around it. You know, I think that's part of why people get involved with making wine to begin with.
So is being a successful winemaker like being, for instance, a sex god? You know, I mean, is that a sexy thing to create a great wine and have everybody blubber about it?
I mean, I suppose it depends on, you know, the makeup of the person and how good the wine is. But I would tend to say, yeah, it is. It's one of those things that is very, very difficult to do consistently. Anybody can make a good wine. To consistently make very, very good wine is extraordinarily difficult.
There's a certain sensuality, though, about making wine, I think, because, you know, if you paint a painting or you knit or crochet, you know, you make a product that people can look at and enjoy or whatever. But when you make wine, somebody actually consumes it. I mean, they literally run it through their body and it excites a number of senses. And, you know, it really is a very exciting thing, I think, to create something that somebody goes, oh, my gosh, you know, this is like, you know, dying and going to heaven.
Yeah, and there's something, I think, attractive about the more transient nature of wine as a work of art. So,
yeah,
it definitely will pull people in. But
definitely true. Okay, so let's stop the pontification and let's talk about the transition. So you start out with a couple hundred bucks worth of home winemaking gear. You upgrade that over the years. You get into the best gear that you possibly can, and then what happens?
Well, you know, the first thing is we have a saying in the winemaking world, and that is that we say that the best way to make a small fortune in the wine business is to start with a big one. you know, making the change from making wine at home in your garage, or even if you have gone, you know, way off the deep end and have created a special outbuilding or room in your home for doing your winemaking, the sheer scale of what you're talking about when you're trying to produce enough wine to be commercially viable is staggering initially. Your operating costs are going to be relatively fixed as far as your rent and your electric bill and your water bill and,
right.
and all of that stuff. So you have to make enough wine that you can sell at a high enough price point to cover those costs and still turn a profit. Realistically speaking, if everything goes well and once you start selling wine, just keep in mind that, you know, you're, especially if you're making red wine, you're going to make it, you're going to put it in the barrel for a couple of years, then you're going to bottle it, and it has to sit for a little while longer. So there's a period of 2 to 3 years that you're making an investment that you're not actually selling any product at all.
And you're on your hands and knees praying that it turns out right.
That's right, and making sure that you, you know, don't do something along the way to spoil that investment.
Do you guys have any figures in terms of, you know, how many years typically it takes to recoup your investment, or do most people not recoup their investment? What's the story?
You do, yeah, and as a matter of fact, we do have those numbers. On average, assuming once you start selling your product and that you're able to sell out of each vintage within 12 months, it's usually year 5 where the winery as a business starts to operate in the black, and usually somewhere around year 8 when you've recouped your total initial investment and you're back at a break-even point.
And that assumes that you're making drinkable wine.
That does assume that you're making drinkable wine.
And I'm thinking that there are certain varietals that will help you recoup your money a little bit faster than others, right?
Yeah, there can be. Certainly white wines will help along those lines because they don't require as much time in storage and aging before they go to the market. Pinot Noir is a varietal that doesn't age as long in the barrels, and so you can get it to market a little bit faster. Although these days, with it being very popular, the cost of the fruit's gone up. So, yes and no on that one. Certainly, if you do something along the lines of, you know, the big California Cabernets, that's where you're going to be maximizing the amount of time that it takes for you to recoup that investment. Those are wines that will go.
Yeah, that surprises
barrel.
Me though, because you know they also sell for so much more money. We got really the one minute left, and so what is the process, real quickly? What do I do if I want to go pro?
Well, the first thing you need to do is contact a consultant that can help you do all of your permits and paperwork with federal, state, and local government. That's a process. It takes about a year, and you really do want to have the help. It costs a little bit to have somebody do that, but it's really important to get it done right the first time. Otherwise, you're paying rent on a building and paying interest on a loan for equipment that you can't use because you're filled out a piece of paperwork wrong. You know.
So step number one is to get help. You know, I think we're going to have to continue this discussion, unfortunately, next week, and people will be waiting with bated breath. Can we continue this topic?
Yeah, hopefully next week we can talk about some of the things that you can do right to get around sort of the daunting startup numbers.
And you can help us do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you're my hero. Okay. Well, Tristan Johnson with morewinemaking.com. We've been having so much fun with this series. I really appreciate it. And we're going to continue talking about going pro next week. Unfortunately, we will not go pro this week. Tristan, hey, thanks very much. We'll talk to you next week, hey?
Oh, it's a pleasure, Dave.
And I love, love, love talking home winemaking with Tristan. We'll have him back next week. But next, we're going to talk to somebody who did go pro. It's one of the more interesting home winemaker profiles that you're going to hear on Grape Encounters Radio. You know, one of my absolute favorite things to do on Grape Encounters Radio is to introduce you to people who were in a completely different profession, had nothing to do with winemaking or selling wine, and they gave up that profession and they migrated over into the wine business. And I have, on a number of occasions on Facebook, asked our Facebook friends to tell us their wine story and how they became winemakers and what they did before that. And I've gotten a lot of really interesting responses, and we've introduced a lot of people to you. But I think the most interesting migration from one profession to another has to be my guest that I've got on right now. It's Rebecca Pittock-Schultes, coming to us from Carlton, Oregon. And Rebecca, we're going to play maybe a little bit of What's My Line here. Thanks for joining us on Grape Encounters.
Happy to be here. Thank you, David.
Okay, so let's start out with what you're doing right now, okay? And you're wearing a lot of hats, okay? But I don't want you to talk about your original profession just yet.
Okay.
But right now, you're doing a number of different things, and let's lay it out for them.
Well, I am the operations manager for the Trappist Abbey's wine warehouse and winery operations, which are fairly recent. The wine warehouse has been here for almost 20 years. It was the first storage and fulfillment facility for Oregon's Northern Willamette Valley wine industry. They've worked with a lot of the big names over the years, but we store for about 150 different wineries.
That is amazing. All from the local area.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And it keeps us pretty hopping, especially this time of year. Wineries are clearing everything out of their facilities to make room for harvest. So. We have about 220,000 cases of wine.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, probably estimated somewhere around a $60 million inventory.
Oh, my gosh. But that wasn't enough for you. You decided that you needed to follow your heart, and you caught the bug, right?
I did. I had owned a wine shop prior to coming here, which when I closed that in February of 2007 led to me getting a little involved with the production side of things. I was a harvest intern at Willikinsey Estate, which is where the real winemaking bug sort of took hold.
They make great Pinots, by the way. My brother and sister-in-law gave me a membership to their wine club for Christmas, and I just, oh my gosh, I enjoy their wine so much.
Lucky you.
So you caught the bug there.
I did. And I ended up, after harvest, coming to work for the Abbey, which is where I was in the beginning, prior to taking over as manager. I was running their custom shipping department, which is direct-to-consumer shipping for the wineries who store with us. And through that process of doing a lot of research and a lot of nerve-wracking study on wine laws throughout the country, both federal and the individual state laws, worked to develop a program that would help small producers, mom-and-pop type operations, you know, all making well under 1,000 cases a year,
right,
find a way to connect directly with consumers across the country, and to do so in a way that was not going to be so administratively burdensome that they would just say, you know, heck with it, I'll just ship illegally and hope I don't get caught.
And that's a huge problem for small winemakers, right, is just finding some means of distribution.
It is absolutely probably the greatest challenge. You know, making the wine is the fun part. That's really the easy part. Actually finding a way to connect with people around the country who want your products and to find a way to get it into their hands is the most challenging.
Okay, so I want to come back to this because I know, you know, we're a few minutes into the show,
right,
and people are wondering, okay, what did she do before she became involved in the wine industry, wearing a number of different hats? Okay, so lay it on them. What was your profession?
I am an aviation maintenance technician on F-15
fighter
for the Oregon Air National Guard.
And that's what you did full-time, right? I mean, you worked on F-15s.
I was doing that full-time for several years. And after I was activated because of September 11th, so I was working out at the Portland airport at the Panga base, as we lovingly call it, every day. And after a while, I got tired of driving from McMinnville to Portland every day. It was, you know, leaving the house at 5 o'clock in the morning and getting home at about 5:30 at night. And so it was a lot of long hours for a single mom with two kids.
Okay, so you decide that being a full-time F-15 mechanic is too taxing as a single mother of two children, right?
I just got tired of the drive and not seeing them except for on weekends.
Okay, but then you take on all of these other responsibilities. I mean, it's just amazing to me. So you work in this warehouse, which is a warehouse for how many different wineries?
About 150 different wineries store with us at this time.
Okay, then you start Northwest Wines to You, which is a great concept. It allows mom-and-pop winemakers to have a means of distribution, right?
Yeah, it helps them get their hands directly into, or get their wine, excuse me, directly into the hands of consumers all over the country.
And then you took on two other projects.
Well, I met the Bayless family in 2008 because of the Abbey here, and the Bayless family owns Ghost Hill Cellars and the Bayless Bauer Vineyard, and that land has been in their family since 1906.
Wow.
Thus the name Ghost Hill. There is actually a hilltop in on their property called Ghost Hill where we hope to build a winery, and they needed a new winemaker. And in order for the Northwest Wines to You concept to really work, we needed to make wine. And so I made 8 barrels of wine for them, my first vintage in 2008.
8 barrels of wine?
8 barrels.
And where did you get the knowledge to do that? Because, I mean, you were around the wine business, but... You know, you don't just instantly become a winemaker.
Like I said, I had some great OJT with probably one of the best mentors someone could hope for, with Thibaut Mondé, the winemaker at Willa Kinsey. You know, I worked Harvest with him in 2007, and he was willing to provide me some advice and a whole lot of encouragement. And, you know, I'm very fortunate. Being where I'm at, I'm surrounded by phenomenally talented, highly educated people all the time. And Oregon's wine industry is very cooperative in nature and very friendly in terms of helping each other out. And I just kind of jumped into it the same way I jumped into my wine shop and into Northwest Wines to You and said, well, let's give it a shot, you know.
Well, it's an amazing story.
They provide phenomenal fruit, and so I just try not to screw it up.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. If you just jumped in, by the way, it's Rebecca Pettick-Shouldis, and we've been talking about her change in careers. Well, actually, it wasn't a change because you're still working on F-15s, right, part-time?
One week in a month, I'm a tech sergeant, actually, in the Oregon Air National Guard.
It's a great story. You can check out what Rebecca is doing by Googling Northwest Wines to You. We've had so many interesting career changes that we've talked about on Grape Encounters Radio. Lawyers that have become winemakers, doctors that have become winemakers, captains of industry who have become winemakers, but never ever an F-15 maintenance technician who became a winemaker. Rebecca is doing so many interesting things. Again, check it out, Northwest Wines to You. We'll see you next week on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.